Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Electric Podcasts. I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And this week, I'm coming to you live from Paris. So that's why we are coming in a little bit earlier for most of you because, well, for everyone, actually. But on the East Coast, the people on the East Coast, it's not your usual 4 p.m. We're going to test it out for a few weeks, see how it goes like that, and then we'll adjust if we need to. But as Jules said, it's coming live from New York. How's it going in New York, Seth?
It's nice. Probably not Paris nice, though.
Yeah, is it starting to get cold already?
A little bit cold.
Yeah. It's not that hot here in Paris, though. It's not, you do have some kind of winter here.
I'm you got a looking forward. Tropical tree behind you, so I'm thinking it's a lot warmer. Yeah,
I am in a house. All right. So big week this week to talk about Tesla news and a few other topics, but mainly Tesla because they had a big week this week, starting with, of course, the delivery and production result that came out on Wednesday. And yeah, if you've been following Electric on that one, you probably already have a good idea you had a good idea ahead of time because we reported, of course, last week that Elon said that they had a chance at reaching 100,000 deliveries in the quarter. But on Monday, we also reported that based on our sources, they were still a few thousand short at the end of within just a day left in the whole quarter. So that wasn't looking great. And sure enough, Tesla released the numbers on Wednesday saying that they delivered 97,000 cars during the quarter, which is still a delivery record. If you guys remember the quarter before that, which was also a delivery record, was 95,000 cars. So an increase on that front. And big increase also in production. 87,000 cars were produced in Q2. In Q3, it is
96,000, I believe.
Exactly. So that's a big increase on that front. Also, they confirm an increase in net orders from Q2 to Q3, and they're going to enter Q4 with a bigger backlog of orders, which is also nice. Of course, last week we reported based on the email that Elon sent out to employees that he said they were tracking for 110,000 net orders for the quarter. So that backlog could be quite significant going into Q4. And now with that higher production capacity, on top of potentially having the Gigafactory 3 production capacity to whatever levels it would be by the end of the year, Tesla is set for another, in my opinion, record quarter in Q4. So, yeah. If we look at what happened here exactly, definitely not a demand issue. I know we come back to this always because there's always some kind of rumors that Tesla is having some demand problem, peak demand, and whatnot. Definitely not the issue here. It looks, again, like an inventory delivery bottleneck here in this case. Because what we're hearing from specific markets here is that if the inventory was better distributed, the production inventory was better distributed at the end of the quarter, Tesla could have probably reached over 100,000 units. Places like the Netherlands, which had a record quarter with over 7,000 deliveries. They have an EV incentive that's ending by the end of the year. So they're still good for Q4. And that's what boosting orders in the market. But so Tesla had a record quarter there, but they still have a ton of orders to fulfill in Q4. And they had them apparently before the end of the quarter too. So if they had the inventory there, they could have probably got a lot more deliveries there. Places like the UK too, we are hearing they are inventory restricted there. So if Tesla would have made, not just in the UK, but more right-hand drive Model 3s in general, they could have probably helped. Because I think Australia also could have used, they got a big shipment of something like 2,000 units, but apparently they could have used a bigger shipment. So something else to watch out in Q4. Do you have any prediction for Q4, Seth?
I think they'll hit 100. Notably, you know, it's the holiday shopping quarter. Also, Tesla's last quarter with the federal tax credit, any federal tax credit in the U.S.? So a lot of people, even though it's only $1,800 something
for the Model 3, might be a bigger difference for people.
Yeah, I think that's still a notable amount of money, and I think why not buy it with that rather than in Q1 without that? It might be hard for. I think Tesla's going to hit over 100 Q4. I think it's probably a foregone conclusion. The question is, do they keep that kind of number up indefinitely, or do they hit another drop in January under 100,000?
Oh, I think a drop is coming in January, but it will still probably beat Q2, Q3 numbers that we're getting now, I think. Because I think that when you say, are you just being like conservative? I think over 100,000, because it could be over 100,000, could be 150,000. We don't.
It could be, if they can make that many.
Yeah, so that's a question, I think, because I think they're going to see higher demand across the board in most market in Q4 versus Q3. But it won't be that big of a higher demand here. I think the biggest change is going to be China with the start of Chinese-made Model 3. I think the demand here is quite high, especially since Tesla has been taking orders on Chinese-made Model 3 for months now. So the question is more going to be about the production capacity of Gigafactory 3, just how many cars they're going to put out in Q4. And your guess is as good as mine here. It could be 1,000. It could be 10,000. I have no idea. So whatever they make during that time. But the more they make in Gigafactory 3, the more it's helping all other markets, because then it frees up production capacity in Fremont that was normally used for shipment to China. They use that for production capacity elsewhere, which is going to be probably easier to deliver quickly by the end of the year than in further out markets like China. So we could see a big logistic improvement from that. But of course, it all depends on how many Model 3s can come out of the Gigafactory 3. So is it going to contribute just a handful, or is it going to contribute a few thousand, which would be more significant? At one point, they were talking about 3,000 a week by the end of the year. So, but they've always been way out of those estimate before, so I wouldn't bet too much on that. All right. Other big thing this week was the summon feature, smart summon feature that Elon called it Tesla's most viral feature, and I think that's fair. He released the numbers, actually. He said in the first few days, over 500,000, 550,000 smart summon trips, smart summon use have been completed, which is quite significant. However, a few of those uses that have ended in crashes. And so the feature itself, I've seen viral use, but it also went viral in the more common sense that on social media and everything, because I'm probably sure that most of those uses were not actual like people using the feature for a functional purpose. I think it was people trying the feature for the first time or the second time, whenever, just testing it. And a lot of those people were testing it for their social media, because they've been posting their video everywhere of those of smart summon tries. And again, a few of them ended in crashes or near miss crash or kind of a suspicious situation. So we reported on those earlier this week, saying that people are doing dumb things with smart summon, which isn't always smart, by the way. It's also the feature itself can be dumb. So something to take into account. Things like using the feature in extremely crowded parking lot situation is not ideal at all. Like, it is pretty good. It is impressive in many ways, but you're pushing it to its limit by trying it in a parking lot that's full of people. The situation, like the people with pushing carts, children running around, things like that, just not ideal. Also, people doing it without the car within their line of sight. We've seen plenty of those. You're not supposed to do that either, because when you activate the smart summon, you're supposed to hold well, it is the only way to make it work. You're holding onto the button to make it work. And if you let go of that button, it's like, what do they call it? A Denman switch? Is that it?
Yeah.
A Denman switch. If you let it go, it's supposed to stop, but that's only useful if you see what the car is doing.
It's only as useful as your internet connection as well.
That too. and we've seen people testing the object detection feature of the smart summon, meaning they throw themselves in front of the car or whatnot. So don't do that too.
Jesus.
Yeah, we've seen the people do that with Autopilot before at higher speed. At least smart summon is not that fast. So
right. I mean, Tesla's kind of betting on like all the screw-ups are going to be so slow that it's not going to be a big deal. But clearly, they're going to probably get some lawsuits about wrecked cars. I'm just assuming here.
The language is clear. It's like Autopilot. They are responsible for it, and that's why they should always be within the line of sight and ready to let go of the button.
Yeah, but what if you let go of the button and it continues another couple feet and crashes into a wall?
Yeah. That's the thing that always people were talking about with the Autopilot crashes. Like people were looking for a crash where it's just not just the Autopilot failing, but Autopilot like causing the accident. Yeah, right. just not. Like not seeing the lines and going over or something like that. It was actually like jerking the car really fast into a ditch or something. But we've never really seen that happen. Of course, Tesla is also like limitation on what the Autopilot can do in terms of how strong of a movement it can do. So, but anyway, so we've seen a bunch of that. And NHTSA confirmed that they are looking into those incidents. NHTSA, of course, is the American transport regulator, and they said that they're in contact with Tesla to talk about those incidents. Of course, I assume that NHTSA had to approve at least it was part of the discussion to approve that feature to a certain degree, because Tesla said that they were waiting for regulators at one point. So I know that there's a bunch of different regulators in the US, but
yeah. Anyway, I have some news. I have gotten V10 on my Model X, and I tried the Smart Summon, and it worked great, but the car drove off the driveway into the grass a little bit. I don't know if that's within the realm of like success or failure, but
were you in the grass? What did you do? Come to me?
I was like in front of the garage, and the car was like down the driveway a little bit. Clearly wasn't for any good purpose. It was just to test out the feature.
Yeah.
So all it had to do was kind of roll straight, and it kind of rolled off the driveway a little bit and then back onto the driveway. I don't know.
But you said it worked great other than that, so it came to you? Is that?
Yeah, it came and it worked. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was a little disconcerting that it went off the driveway, but,
It's in beta.
It's in beta, yeah.
That's the main complaint about the feature itself, is that people don't see that much use to it. Like, what can you do with the feature? For the most part, what it looks to me is like it's something that Tesla can release within the confine of current regulations. And it works on private property. So that's the whole point, really.
Right, right.
Speaking of, the other post that we had about Smart Summon this week was that Drag Times, the big YouTuber that often posts about his Tesla ownership experience, and especially the higher end Tesla, which he drags race, hence the name Drag Times. They were testing the Smart Summon, and they got pulled over by a police officer. So they were testing it in a private parking lot, an empty parking lot. So I commend them for that. I hate when I see those people doing it in very busy parking lot. But they were doing it, and what I don't like, they were doing it in the parking lots where they have roadways with stop signs and everything. Smart Summon is not made to endow stop signs. Like, it's just a regular parking lot situation where you don't really have a stop sign. So they did that, and it ran that stop sign. Sure enough, cops saw it, pulled the car over, almost too perfect to be true. which of course is leading a lot of people thinking that it was staged, which is, in my opinion, likely, though it's hard to confirm.
Some 100% people, stage. 100%.
Yeah, looks very staged. Some people claim to have talked to the police officer in question who said it was staged. First of all, was the guy paid or something? Did the police officer have time to take out, because he had a real patrol car and everything, so.
Yeah, it looked like a real patrol car.
Yeah, it looked like it was in duty and
hopefully
everything.
Hopefully off duty. I don't know.
Yeah, hopefully, right? But drag times hasn't admitted to anything to have staged it. Either way, the situation could be a real scenario, though. So that's a point of the whole thing. It could be a real scenario. However, I think in most jurisdictions, police officers, they don't enforce traffic laws in private properties like parking lots, though. I'm not that to say that you shouldn't follow those traffic laws, but I'm not sure they can, other than some like endangerment, like things like that, which maybe running a stoplight could fall into that. I'm not sure. Either way, Dan Brooks from Drag Times was saying, who gets the parking ticket? Is it the car or is it me? Of course it's him. So that was the only relevant question. If people actually had that question, of course it's him. Like, everything in Tesla's literature about the feature makes it clear that you're responsible for the car. And that's why there's a dead man switch. So you should get a ticket. Of course, he didn't get a ticket. Does it have something to do with the officer being off duty and the whole thing being staged? You be the judge of that.
It would have been cool at the end if the officer just started stripping like a or something. Because it seemed very fake. And even the officer didn't seem real. But, that patrol car definitely did look real.
Yeah. The only thing, like, what made me think that it wasn't staged. It's like everyone was saying it was staged. It's like they're like, oh, there was a GoPro in the car. Like, of course, it's a GoPro in the car. The guy is filming a YouTube video about testing the smart feature, like hundreds of thousands of other people. So that was like, that's not why it's staged. But you're right. There's other things that point to it being staged. The reaction of the police officer, amongst other things. The police officer himself saying, who do I give the ticket to? Like,
right.
Who cares? Like, you can give the ticket to the driver, or you can just assign the police officer can also assign the tickets to the car, and then the car owner has to pay it. So either way, it's coming to the car owner. It's not like he's going to contact Tesla and say, oh, your Tesla software was in charge. And, nah, you would have never thought that. So weird. Anyway, moving on. Another big news of the week was another Tesla acquisition. Tesla hasn't confirmed it yet, but it looks like it's very much happening. It was first reported by CNBC, but then confirmed by the CEO of the company in question. The startup is called DeepScale, and it's basically an AI startup focused on deep neural network with a focus on computer vision. So deep neural network for computer vision. You can imagine why Tesla would want a company like that. It looks like a relatively small company in the development phase, though they did came out with a few different products relating to deep neural nets, and including a computer vision system for self-driving car, or at least to deploy autonomous features inside vehicles. And their whole focus, from what we can tell, is on extremely computing power and overall power efficient deep neural nets, which also has been a focus from Tesla. The whole point of building their self-driving chip to be able to increase the computational power in the car while limiting the power efficiency, so they don't want a chip that just consumes a lot of power. And we're going to get into that a little later too in the podcast, but regarding the DeepScale acquisition, it basically looked like what people call, I think, an acqui-hire. Is that it?
Yeah,
acqui-hire, where they buy the company not for much for their business, for their products, but for the talent itself. So the people building the company. The CEO of of deep scale, Forest Hyundai. Has officially joined Tesla as a senior staff machine learning scientist, and all this staff is allegedly gonna join him. He has a PhD in electrical engineering from UC Berkeley. And so the idea is that right now the market for AI people, and especially deep learning people and computer vision people, the market is extremely competitive because there's just a ton of company investing a ton of money to get that to market, because it's a game changer, of course, self-driving cars. And we've seen, especially Tesla, having a product delivered to market, it makes them a prime target for poaching. Like, a lot of people in the Autopilot team have been poached by company from NVIDIA to GM to Google's Waymo project, Cruise and whatnot, and Lyft. I said Cruise twice, I think. That doesn't mean that Tesla hasn't been good at acquiring talent yet. They had a ton of talent, and they still have. But acquiring a team like that helps a lot to bring a bunch of talent in just one go. And presumably they're going to be working under Capperdy, who's been for the last 2 years Tesla's head of AI and computer vision. So I see that good news. They haven't disclosed anything like the numbers in terms of how much it costs. But again, like I said, the company seemed relatively small. The last we heard of them in terms of fundraising was a $15 million round earlier this year. That was a Series A, so normally you have some kind of like, what do you call it? Like the very first round you raised, like just, there's a word for that.
I don't know what it is, but so you're trying to imagine a value for it?
Yeah, I'm trying, because Series A is the first like official round, but before that there's right. another.
Angel? Just,
from angel investor and family and stuff, like just like you're pulling right. some money together to get the startup going, and then you go for a real like professional full capital raise, which was $15 million. So that doesn't, without knowing the percentage of the company that they sold for that $15 million, there's no way to say how much it's worth. But I would find it hard to believe that it's worth anything more than $50 million or something like that. That would be surprising to me at this stage, at least.
And did they buy it with stock, or did they buy it with cash, or
we really don't know. It would be very nice if they bought him with stocks.
Yep.
And the stocks was divided throughout the staff, since it's not acquired apparently. That way the staff has an incentive to keep working at Tesla and deliver that elusive self-driving product. But yeah, exciting things on that front for sure. Either way, all right. We looking at the V10 update. We saw that Tesla updated the language about the not just Sentry Mode, but data sharing. So if you go into your settings option, and then you go to safety and security, I think there's a data sharing tab. You click on that, and then you have to accept it. I think we haven't seen it updated, because in the US, when they do update that, it doesn't prompt it to you. At least I didn't see it on my update. I don't know if you saw it on yours.
I didn't.
But they started pushing it to Europe, apparently. I haven't heard of anything other than one source that sent it to me. I think Fabien.
Yeah, you know what? I wonder if it's related to GDPR, like the data sharing regulations in Europe.
Yeah, that's my thinking. So, but why people haven't heard much about it is because I think Fabien is like one of the only ones to have received V10 in Europe. He was himself surprised to get the update in France, but when they get the update, they have the new terms for data sharing that shows up. So you have to accept it. And he did point out to us that there was some changes relating to Sentry Mode, where Tesla now says that because all this data sharing Tesla takes, and apparently that's increased with V10 too, where they pull a lot more clips from your cars now, just using the camera, they pull more clips to improve their neural net system and leading to full self-driving. But they always say that your VIN number is not attached to those video clips, so that it's there's no privacy issues regarding to like employees just like spying on certain people by looking up their VIN and seeing what they're up to. However, Force Entry Mode tests say that they are linking the video clips to your VIN number as a backup system for 72 hours. So there was already some language about that, but it was all clarified now. They do match your VIN for 72 hours, which means that technically, if someone was to break into your car and they knew about Sentry Mode and they steal your flash drive on which the footage is recorded, then you would have no way to see what happened and try to track that thief and give the information to the police and whatnot. So Tesla says that that won't be the case because they will beam that to, I don't know how quick they can do that, don't know when I think of it, but they would beam that to their like cloud storage basically, and they would keep it for 72 hours. So you could technically reach out to them, I'll assume, though. Good luck with
So,
that.
yeah, that would be a nightmare. I mean, unless somebody was like killed or something. But also, it's interesting. Does that data get beamed immediately, or is that when you hit Wi-Fi? Because I can't imagine that Tesla is uploading a lot of videos over AT&T's network in the U.S. and the other.
Here's
I
the
would
thing,
imagine.
though, and I see some confusion about that because most people, when they activate their Sentry Mode, they go back to their car and they see, like, what, depending on where the car was parked, they see one or two or sometimes 10, 20, 30 Sentry Mode events. It's not for every Sentry Mode events, they only do it for alarm state events, which
Okay.
mean there's we explained that early on when Tesla released the Sentry Mode, was there's different state of Sentry Mode where the car is just recording, when the car is showing an alert on the screen, and when there's an actual alarm that starts because it detect what Tesla referred to as a severe threat. Here's the thing, we've never seen that happen myself for other than people actually like banging on the windows or actually breaking the windows and getting inside the car. So that's the point. If someone gets your drive, they had to get inside the car, so they had to breaking inside the car. So hopefully the alarm state of Sentry Mode would have triggered and the video would have beamed to the cloud. But like you said, there's some question about like when does it beam, like, because it would have to be almost instantly because the video is recorded right before the time that we would well, you could actually remove the drive and then keep recording, but oh yeah, if they don't steal the car, like, no, normally we're talking about a breaking scenario where you're breaking and still inside the car. They don't really trying to steal the car, right? Though not impossible, but less likely. So yeah, that's good news. And Tesla says that they could also use that footage just for general improvement on Sentry Mode. So some people have been speculating that Tesla is not just looking at like very basic information of seeing people coming in, we start recording and whatnot, but they could actually detect threats to the car in different ways. We've seen, of course, the third party application of someone that can detect licenses and cars, not licenses, but plates number on cars, and then can determine the pattern of people following you, being tracked and whatnot. Very CIA type of deal.
Yeah.
All right. Now we're gonna move into some patent application that Tesla had this week, and us seeing some kind of patterns in the patent application, if we
Patent
can say that.
patterns.
Patterns in the patent applications. They add, first off, a new seat design with a temperature control system inside the seat, which sounds like a liquid cooled and liquid heated, or no, the heating part is element, so it's not liquid heated. Yeah, so liquid cool and element heated system that is more compact and more power efficient. And that's going to be the theme here, power efficiency. So if you remember back a few months back, we reported on Tesla basically reinventing the wiper with like a magnetic wiper system that was also supposed to be more efficient, more power efficient. So it seems like Tesla is sort of focusing on the power efficiency of their subsystem and components. We know that Tesla is already basically the king of efficiency for long-range electric vehicles. And that's mainly due to the efficiency of the actual electric powertrain, which is the most important part, and things like aerodynamic performance and the weight of the cars too. But there's plenty of other power-consuming part components inside a car. Of course, they are all way less consuming than an actual powertrain. Like the force to move the car is what is more power consuming, of course. But if you can make a bunch of small improvement, like things like in the seats like that, you can improve the overall efficiency of the cars and increase range, especially if you reduce just the weight of those things. But there's also the phenomena, or I don't know if you do this, but if you see like your range is getting a little bit low, then maybe you're gonna not use your heating or your cooling in the car. You're not gonna use your heated seats or your cooling seats. So now, if you have a system like that is supposedly less power demanding, maybe you would still use them if you see your range reducing a lot. So. Or the point about the patent and the patents application is that we saw that one, and we also saw a new power, a new steering power assist system, that all-electric power assist steering system with a high reduction gear ratio that Tesla claims to be smaller and more efficient than their current system. So that would also reduce overall power consumption and could increase the efficiency of the entire car. So power assist steering these days, you either have full electric ones and hydraulics ones and hydraulic assist ones. There's also the steer by wire thing, but I don't think any car right now, at least in the US, can have a steer by wire. So Tesla is designing an all electric one that would apparently be more power efficient. However, you can go. We posted all details of the whole thing on Electrek, but it goes into deep details that I go a bit over my head on that front because very technical. Keeping on the patent application fronts, just earlier today we posted about Tesla filing a patent for basically a bezel-less screen.
Sounds a little bit like the waterfall screens that we see on we've seen on like Samsung phones for a little while. Basically, the edge of the screen creates a kind of holographic effect that makes the pixels seem to go like right to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
If they're doing a different method than Samsung and the other. I think
it sounds like the thing they are because they are filing a patent for it. But what you just described sounds very similar to what is described in that thing. But again, we're talking about extremely technical stuff. The guy that is listed as the inventor for the patent at Tesla, Christoph Gugusis?
I thought that was guy like seems a French, like, French name. You should be able to...
Yeah, well, there's a French name and there's a French name. in Quebec, I've never heard of anyone named Gugusis. Gugusis. I'm so sorry, Christos. I'm messing up your name. He's a Tesla senior staff engineer. Guy seems like a genius. I mean, his resume is as good as it gets. I mean, he has a PhD in physics from Pierre and Marie Curie University in Paris. He's an expert in quantum physics. Before joining Tesla in 2016, he worked for Saint-Gobain, which is a glass supplier for Tesla, and he developed a bunch. He has a bunch of patents there for different type of glass and thin films on glass, which is relevant to this patent because, like you said, you're using like some kind of thin film, holographic film that goes over the edge of the glass and sort of mimic what's happening on the display at the end of the glass so that it looks like it's basically a bezel-less display. What I thought was really, what was fun about that is if you actually look at the Model 3, Model 3 has a large, of course, a center display, and it has relatively thick bezel on it. I feel like it's pretty big. But we posted last year when Tesla was doing the refresh of the Model S, the refresh of the design of the Model S, we posted some design images of what they were working on, and that included, of course, moving to a more Model 3 similar design with minimalistic look and an horizontal center display. That display in the design was completely bezel-less. So I thought that was an interesting point to bring that. So it looks like Tesla is actually working to make that happen. That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, these things often take a while. And you know, after covering Apple and Google, they kind of patent just about everything. Mm-hmm. But these things seem oddly specific to Tesla's products. So it seems
That's the point. Not necessarily, because in the patent application, there's not actually any mention of cars or anything like that. There's just displays. And in the drawings, they actually use images of mobile phones and tablets to discuss it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, I guess, of patents for a lot of companies, supposedly not Tesla, but maybe now Tesla, is that they
can monetize
and weaponize those patents when other companies come after them. And you know, I mean, clearly Samsung has a product that does a similar thing and already out in the wild. So maybe Tesla found a new way to do getting the pixels thing to the edge. And, you know, somewhere down the line, Apple wants to do this, then Tesla can say, hey, that's our, you know, our thing. Give us a bunch of money. I don't know if that's really the motivation, but certainly an option.
Well, Tesla has been very openly against some type of a patent trolling, which is not exactly what you just described, but similar. Anyway, I would like to see that in Tesla's future cars, for sure. Moving on, Porsche, the Taycan. So they started production last month. They unveiled the car last month. They started production a week later. And now they're talking about increasing production capacity, something they've been talking about for a while now. The original capacity was supposed to be 20,000 cars a year, which for Porsche is pretty good because, I mean, Porsche is a big name, but in volume, they are relatively small. So 20,000 car per year, it was a big vehicle program for them. However, they've been they claimed to see higher demand than they originally anticipated. They've been saying that for a while, though. So they've been saying that before unveiling the car. And what happened with the unveiling of the car, I think it was well-received by most people. People liked it. Like, it looked super cool. It looked almost just as cool as the prototype did. Specs are very good, though, of course, most Tesla fans are comparing it to the Model S, and it doesn't compare very well. But I think that I don't think that would affect them as much. I think a bunch of people just want a Porsche, and if they have an electric option, it's cool. So plenty of people will just never buy a Tesla for whatever reason. So to have another sports sedan, well, Model S is not could be considered also a family sedan because of its size. Not the Porsche, though. But performance-wise, it's also a sports sedan. So it's nice to have an alternative. So I think that doesn't affect Damien as much. What I think affected Damien when the car was unveiled, I don't know about you, but the price was surprising a little bit to me. Like it was higher than I thought. So I thought that might have turned around some people that actually at first reserved the car, or I don't think I can even say reserve because they had some kind of, they called it like a show of interest for the car. So they called people prospective buyers, not reservation holders or pre-orders or anything like that. But apparently they still said after the unveiling that they had 30,000 people sign up to buy the Taycan. So that's good.
So a year and a half.
Yeah, exactly. A year and a half based on the original production capacity, which they are apparently increasing now. They announced this week that they are hiring 500 more people to work out of the Zuffenhausen factory where they are producing it. And so that brings the total to 2,000. So that's all they're talking about it. They're not talking about what's the actual new volume capacity. They're talking just about jobs. But they do say that it's not because they just now realize that they need more people to produce the 20,000 cars. It's because they want to increase the overall capacity. So that's good news. But I find it weird that they're talking about it just in the job perspective, because of course you don't just need more people. You need more batteries. You need more all of the components, and especially the batteries, I think, are often a bottleneck. So I would have liked to hear about that. So I'm thinking that maybe even Porsche doesn't know exactly how many they can produce. Like, they were planning for 20,000, but now they want to do more. They're willing to hire people to do more, but there might be other bottlenecks here. So that might be why we don't have a new exact production capacity. Moving on to Volvo. So last week was exciting. Volvo finally announced that they're unveiling the XC40. The all-electric version of the XC40, as I say, because they have other version already on the market. But if it's not all-electric, we don't care about it.
The XC40 is the most popular car, right?
Vehicle. I think it's the second most popular car. Yeah. But it's up there. I think it's like 80,000 units a year right now. They are hats or something like that. So it is a significant vehicle program for... But it starts relatively cheap, too. It's like... It's in the low 30,000 or something. So for a Volvo,
pretty good.
It's not too bad, yeah. So last week they announced they're going to unveil it on October 16. And they teased the safety capacity of the car. Of course, safety is a big thing for Volvo. They've been known for that. This week they unveil a bunch of teaser images, just design drawings though. But they also confirm a few features of the car, including the fact that it's going to have a full frunk, a full 30 liter, is that all you call it?
Yeah,
30 liter front trunk. So it's gonna have that. They confirmed the design of the front end, which is always a big deal for when an automaker is going into all electric vehicles, because they're used to having the grille. And so what is going to be their approach to the grille in an all electric car? Volvo's approach is very similar to Tesla's original approach with the nose cone thing, where there's still a form of a grille there, but it's being replaced by a solid panel of the same body color as the car. So not exactly like Tesla's approach, because Tesla had like a demarker for the grille, which we call a nose cone, but that was a different color from the rest of the car. And Volvo is going to be the same color. So that's interesting. We've seen similar things like the Kona.
Right.
Kona and the Niro, they have a demarcation to show where should be a grill, but there's not like an actual grill there. So a similar thing there. So we've seen a lot of people do that when they have a car that exists in another version of another powertrain. So they have a gas powertrain, they have an electric powertrain, then they do keep the same design, so they do keep the same grill, but it's either a fake one inside or it is covered or anything like that. So they're doing that.
So do you think this is,
they also confirm,
this is plastic or metal or something in between?
Probably plastics. It's like the bumper. It's like in front of the...
Yeah.
Well, it's not the bumper. It's not supposed to bump, but most likely plastic in my opinion.
I mean, there's no structural...
I mean, we've seen other people... No. Like Mercedes EQC... That's a weird, like, textured plastic on the grill. Right. So it's not uncommon, exactly. They did confirm also the wheels option, 19 and 20-inch wheels. So pretty standard there. They say it's going to be offered in 8 exterior colors, including a sage green option.
Okay.
So now you know. And standard, the roof is going to come as a contrasting black. That I like, though. I like when cars do that. When they have a white car with a black roof.
Yeah, like a two-tone.
Yeah, I like that. So that could be cool. All right, so we're gonna have probably more to say next week about it. They are doing that thing where they just trickle down some information leading to the unveiling. So we're gonna probably learn more about the specs probably next week, and then the week after that is gonna be the actual unveiling of the car, which I'm pretty excited about. I love the form factor, like I said last week, and everything. The only thing really I'm concerned is the price, and that's always my fear when you have a car, a multi-powertrain platform, because I can go out right now and buy an XC40 gas-powered car for $33,000 in the U.S. So if someone is on the market for a car like that and doesn't necessarily care about electric or not, like they might consider it electric, but they also like, man, they're on the fence or something, but they're like, oh, I'm falling in love with the XC40. I want to buy an XC40. Then if they see an XC40 at $33,000 and then they see an XC40 at $50,000, which one do you think they're going to take if they were on the fence about electric? They're going to go with a gas-powered one.
I think $40,000 would be a good price point. As close to $40,000 as possible, because you get the federal tax credit, which kind of brings it in line.
Definitely. Volvo still has that for sure. But the other thing is you need a good salesman for it. Like if you have a good salesman, they could sell to you the difference in pricing. They could tell you like the gas savings and maintenance savings and whatnot. But of course, gas salesmen in legacy automaker dealerships,
they're horrible. So my Chevy Bolt lease is coming up due 3 years. And they've been emailing me, and of course, like, you know, how dealerships have you on like a list, and they just call you and call you and call you until you tell them to go away.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was nearby the dealership, and I was like, all right, I'll just go in and see what they say, because really we know that GM doesn't have any other EVs coming very soon, like within a couple months. The new Bolt 2020 is going to be 259 miles, and I'm actually going on a drive next week. To see what else is new, if anything else is new, or just maybe how the longer drivetrain works or something. I don't know. I'm going out. Maybe I'll like it and maybe I'll upgrade to that. But I went back to my GM dealer, and I would.
They didn't know anything about it.
Sorry, the Chevy dealer. What's that?
I bet they didn't know anything about it.
So they didn't know anything about the 2020. That was almost a given. Not surprising at all. But the guy I talked to was like, oh, I don't think the Bolt's going to be around much longer. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, is there going to be? And he's like, I don't know. I just hear things. And of course, he tried to sell me like a truck and a.
Ah, oh, no.
And he's like, you know, one of the things about the Bolt that people don't like is that there's no room in the back. You need some more room. We got covered. We got a big.
You have a customer that comes in your store and he's like, I like this product. Apparently something, a new version of it is coming out. The guy just start listing bad things about that product instead. Yep. Makes no sense. No,
it doesn't. I mean.
Well, it does if what you have in inventory is a bunch of trucks.
Right. Or makes sense. The Chevy Bolt people haven't come back in 3 years because they don't need oil changes and brake pad upgrades and all this other stuff.
That too. Good point.
I'm seeing that every time I ask GM about it, they're like, no, don't worry, the dealers are incentivized to sell electric vehicles. No, they're not. They're just not. They need to start a new sub brand called Saturn and sell only electric vehicles.
Yeah, that you've been pushing that for a while.
It's not happening, but I'm going to push it again next week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree that when you have this huge legacy business of selling gas powertrain, it's just not the same at all as selling electric vehicles. And dealership are being – they are – I hate talking about like general terms like that, just dealership, because I know some of them that are very – some very like it, like especially – we know one in Quebec, a GM dealership too.
Right. They sell like half the Bolts everywhere. Like they sell absurd amounts of Bolts.
They sell more Bolt than anyone on the market. These the We didn't have the Spark EV. They imported Spark EV from the US and stole them in Quebec before they were available. They were very good. I forgot the name of it. It's like an English name, but in Quebec, in the middle of Quebec. I'm sorry, guys. I forgot it. About it. But,
there's too many.
It's actually not that far. There's not that far from where my parents live. It's an R. It starts with R. I'm not on the comments on YouTube. I'm sure some people on YouTube are like screaming the name.
Let's see. Nope.
no one's screaming.
A third of the dealer sales are Chevy Volts. Bourgeois?
Bourgeois is good, but there's another one. Oh, no. Where is the Bourgeois dealership? I might be confusing it with the name of the town.
Rawdon.
Rawdon, okay, that's them. Okay, it's Bourgeois, GM Bourgeois, or Chevy Bourgeois? Chevy Bourgeois in Rawdon. Those guys, they sell a ton of EVs and they're completely on board. So I know they're not alone to another other dealership or are excited about EVs.
Yeah, particularly on the West Coast, I know there's a lot of dealers that are on board. Here in New York, two Chevy dealers I went to were both garbage. So, I don't know.
Yeah. It is an area where they could improve a lot. I just don't see how, because of the way they are incentivized. They're incentivized to sell cars at breaks. Which is crazy because they do make a lot of money on service. And of course, they incentivize to sell what's on their lot. And they don't get that many inventory for electric cars. But that's partly the fault of the automakers because they don't make that many. And they spread it out in markets where you need them for regulation. So in the US, that's CARB's market. But it's also on a broader scale in Europe, where they send more cars to Europe, because especially now in the next year, when those new EU regulations come into play and the automakers have to sell a lot more EVs, it's hard to find a solution for that.
Yeah, it's a chicken or the egg problem, I guess. What's going to have to happen is, what's happening with the premium SUV makers like Audi and Porsche, and, well, Porsche not an SUV-ish maker, but premium car makers are getting their market taken by Tesla, and not.
Oh, that's a better way to say it.
And they're moving to electric a little bit faster, mm-hmm. and they have kind of premium electric cars. So you kind of have to know that Tesla's in the space. Theoretically, when Rivian or Tesla or somebody else comes out with an electric pickup truck, they're going to have to start dealing with those, because that's what the customers, I think, in the long term will want. So I think that'll make the Chevy dealers not as garbagey as they currently are. That's my opinion.
Oh yeah, for sure. Long term, that will happen. Long term, they will fall under pressure. That there's no doubt about it. But I mean, in short term, if we want to accelerate the adoption, we want the dealership on our side, and it's hard to get them on our side right now.
Yeah,
especially since Tesla is Tesla, like you said, is putting pressure on premium automakers, but it's also scaring them with their business model of not going to the franchise dealership. So it's like they're getting hit on both sides. Of course, Tesla is bringing another point by highlighting the fact that the franchise model is not that efficient in itself too. It was good for automakers early on because it alleviated them the cost of establishing service points and storefronts. But nowadays, it's not necessarily as useful.
Yeah, I'm always thinking to myself, like, it must be tempting for Tesla to say, all right, screw it, let's just do dealerships, because they buy out all their inventory ahead of time. So, like, instead of Tesla bearing the brunt of all that excess inventory, the dealerships will have...
Which Elon always complained about, too.
They don't have to set up, local Teams or whatever, that's all external. It's all like, I mean, it's almost like having an outside entity. It is like having an outside entity, not having to deal with that.
Yeah.
So basically, it would be a whole lot easier for Tesla to have dealerships. But, you know, clearly that's one of the pain points that they're trying to eliminate. And thank God, because my experience with dealerships, like across the board, you know, particularly Curry in New York, if anybody's out there is listening, but just generally speaking, dealerships have always been the worst thing ever. I don't know yeah. if everybody's like that, but
not that the experience with Tesla was always been perfect no. either, but you see a different mentality where the big difference too with Tesla, of course, is that most of the car are still under warranties.
Right.
Vast majority of the car are still under warranty. So that makes a big difference when you don't have to pay for the actual service to a degree, of course, different like maintenance and whatnot. But yeah, it is definitely a weird space to navigate. We should look into other solution for getting the dealers on our side. Anyway, that's us for this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening and watching on YouTube. Let us know what you think about having it at noon Eastern time or whatever your time is right now. For me, of course, keep in mind that for me right now, it's 6 and now it's almost 7. So that's why we are making it a little bit earlier. So let us know. And thank you. See you next time.